T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Unique is their pitching has been so good. Starting pitching has been so good. You would expect that that would mean the ballpark still playing big and their own hitting numbers wouldn't be very impressive. But it hasn't been like that. They've been able to, you know, hit home runs and pitch and keep the other team from scoring a lot of runs, particularly at home.
They have, and I think that's the biggest difference is, hey, the Giants all of a sudden, like, go back a couple of years. What was the issue? Other teams could hit the ball out of the – I mean, how many times do we have that conversation? Hey, other teams can hit the ball out of Oracle Park. Why can't the Giants?
Right.
Well, now it's almost flipped. So, and that's where I wonder if, you know, in the analytics department and everything that's sort of transitioned with Farhan taking over, like, I feel like – and I've brought this up before – Farhan's kind of found something, the secret sauce of, you know, whether it's swing types or whether it's certain types of pitchers that play to the ballpark, whether it's covering the field in terms of defensively with the Giants are a top defensive team in terms of fielding as well. Like they've found the secret sauce to function at a way where I kind of feel like they're ahead of where a lot of these other teams are, you know, and they're kind of playing catch up a little bit.
I'm going to give you a good analogy right after I say you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Station. The segment's brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises. What do you think of this? Tell me if you think it's a stretch or not. Whatever happened in the, you know, whether it was injury or not, the Warriors have found 8 guys who have bought in and know how to scrap. They figured out their best chance of winning lies basically with feeding off Steph. I feel like the Giants are kind of the same. They're a little better than just a scrappy team, but they know their roles. They're gaining confidence. And, you know, I'm not saying they're going to win the National League West, but to me, they've clearly found a way that they can maximize what they have.
Definitely. And I think you start to look at where they can add. I mean, it's clearly bullpen. You know, maybe you need another starting pitcher. Maybe you need another hitter. Like, however you want to go about doing it, you can do it. And I do feel like they've found the formula. And look, the Dodgers at some point, I mean, here's just the reality. The Dodgers at some point are going to, in 30 games, go 23-7 or 24-6. Right. Like, at some point, that's going to happen. Like, they're going to have a month where they're 18 games over 500 or something ridiculous, and all of a sudden, their 3-over is going to be 20-over, and then the Giants are going to have to look in the mirror and say, okay, where are we at? And even if they're still 10-over, which would be awesome, at that point, maybe they're 5 back, and they're fighting for a wild card spot, and it's game over. So I think, you know, the Giants have to kind of keep that in the back of their mind as they go through this and really keep an eye on, you know, with only the 5 playoff spots in each league this season, keep an eye on who they're really battling with. San Diego,
right.
Yes. But at this point, when I look at it, I find it already like hard to find like who's that other team. Like, even if you think the Dodgers are going to take the West in the National League,
well,
and
let's
even
assume,
if you think that,
okay,
go ahead.
No, okay, it's Dodgers-Padres. So Padres get the wild card. Let's assume that, even though I know what you're saying.
Yeah, no, and so let's just say, all right, the Cardinals are 23-15. Let's just say they go on, they win the Central, but that doesn't impact the Giants. The Mets are leading the East. Like, you start looking at, you know, Philly 2018. Like, are they a great team? No. You know, maybe Atlanta if they get healthy. I mean, they're a team that could be in it. You know, Milwaukee. I don't know. Right. Cincinnati. Like, so you really, like, you look at some of these teams. And unless the Giants are going to go cold, which, look, they're going to go through a stretch at some point where they struggle, but you can already see where the Giants just bagging all these wins now is going to help them remain in a race against some teams that really, when push comes to shove, might be mediocre by comparison. Like, why can't the Giants be maybe not the best team in the National League, but could they be the fifth best team in the National League if they keep adding a little bit? I think that's more and more on the table with every win that the Giants bank.
I kind of agree with that, because the other thing is, and I know this is obvious, but the more games you stack early, you're guaranteeing yourself the longer you'll be in it. Because you're right, they're going to, you know, if they tomorrow, you know, if today they start an 8-game losing streak, they're still going to be probably looking at teams like the same teams you just mentioned, Philly, the Reds, Milwaukee, Atlanta. Hey, you know what? We just lost 8 straight, and we're still right there. So that's the other good thing. But I'll tell you what's pretty impressive to me, JD, is on the one hand, you look at, let's just say, Belton Crawford. You're like, what? Belt's hitting 232. Crawford's hitting 234. But their power numbers and RBI numbers, it's like, give me, you know what? Go ahead and hit 230 if you're telling me you're going to finish with 28 homers and 96 RBIs. Hey, Brandon Crawford, feel free to hit 230 if you're going to be able to hit 23 homers this year, knocking 80 plus. That's what's been pretty impressive.
Yeah, and where did that come from is also the question. Because how many years did Giants fans wait for, you know, 2015, 16, 17, 18? Like, why did Brandon Belt and Brandon Crawford, like, why is it happening now is what I'm saying, as opposed to happening years ago? Because it wasn't happening either in the years where they were winning World Series.
Right.
They just had more good players to where, you know, those guys could kind of fall in line, and their depth, I think, in terms of hitting was a little bit underrated, I think, on some of those teams. But now there are aspects of this Giants team, Steiny, that when I look at the numbers, I go, damn, like they look better than some of these teams in a way. Like, maybe the pitching isn't there, but like it just looks more apt to be able to hold up.
I mean, I'm trying to imagine coming into the year and saying, you know what? Brandon Belt's going to lead us in RBIs. Brandon Crawford's going to be the second best run producer. He's going to drive in 18. Longoria is going to be third. And Posey, essentially, is going to be fourth. And I know Posey's got 12 RBIs, and I'm looking, they got a few guys with 12 RBIs. But those are the four guys that were considered
done.
I don't want to say the problem, but okay, we got one more year with these guys, and they're right now the heart and soul like they used to be. And I get it, you know, we're
maybe
month
even
and a half
more two. So.
Well, that's true, because they have less talent around them.
And it's also like they had, you know, Pablo Sandoval at that point was a better hitter than maybe all, you know, Pablo Sandoval when they were winning was a better hitter than Belton Crawford, right? He just was. And Buster Posey was on another level that maybe he's getting back to now. And Hunter Pence was a impactful hitter, you know, in the years where they were winning. It feels like these other guys, the Belts and the Crawford specifically, like they're actually more, they're more carriers now than they were even then. And I don't know, maybe it is the lineup depth, maybe it is more guys up and down that can take you deep, that maybe take some of the pressure off. But that part of it to me, and how they've been able to basically find something, because the assumption was, and you're right, the assumption was, Like, Farhan's going to come in. He's going to tear this thing down to the studs. Like, he's going to sell Crawford, like, or cut him. He's, you know, Brandon Belt's going to Cleveland. Brandon Crawford's going to get DFA'd if he's hitting 230. Like that it's over. And
right.
The truth is, he came in, took a look at it, got him with this new coaching staff, maybe changed the hitting philosophy a little bit, and all of a sudden these guys have found something to the point where they're helping you to the tune of the best, you know, record in the National League.
Exactly.
It's incredible, but it doesn't feel fake. I'll say right. that. Like, the eye test and the numbers, it doesn't feel fake.
Yeah. And you know what? The 650 said something that we talked about in the pre-show meeting that we haven't brought up in this segment on the 650. And go ahead and expand on it, JD. This Giants team feels a little bit like the A's feel with different players coming together, and you find a young guy or two that's good. You find an older guy or two that's has that year. We all know Farhan worked for Billy Beane.
Yeah, it's the wow. These guys have like top of the league pitching. How are they doing that with those guys? Like it's like, which was always something you would say about the A's, not in the three, you know, not in the heyday of the three, you know, the big three, but basically ever since, it's like, God, they pieced together that pitching. How's that staff any good? It's older hitters that maybe used to be good, that then stunk, that they come to the A's and they find something, and then, oh my God, they're good again. And then it's randoms. It's cast-offs right. with power from other teams, and it kind of comes together. It's a bullpen that might be a statistically less suspect than the eye test, if you watch it. But, and eventually, I mean, you think with the A's template, right? The A's have had some statistically good bullpens that have actually come up small for them in big moments.
Right.
And this Giants team kind of has that feel to it, right? Like, oh, the bullpen. You know, you get in a big playoff series, the bullpen is going to wind up losing it for them. Or, you know, or maybe a managerial decision winds up losing it for them. But the rest of it, like, it's all in line, really. It's all that template. And then
the
prospects are on the way, too, which, right. you know, is something that the A's were able to obviously pepper in as they went.
Yeah, and the year that always sticks out to me, or the couple years that always stick out to me as kind of the quintessential player that Billy Beane gets and all of a sudden gets some mileage out of, Brandon Moss in 13 and 14, when he came to the A's and hit 30 homers in 25. He had 21 his first year with the A's, but you know, he had three big years for the A's and was a big part of those playoff teams.
Well, and he didn't even come up, Steiny. He didn't come up till June in 2012, and he
That's
hit 21
right. Hell, Josh runs. Donaldson, too, was a guy who started out as a catcher who wasn't even going to play until, don't tell me the guy's name. It was the Detroit third baseman that got hurt, and it allowed him to put Donaldson at third. What was his name?
Yeah, he hit home runs, too. That guy hit home runs, too. I know who it is. Brandon Inge.
That's right, Brandon Inge.
Another random, like, this guy stinks. Oh, he just hit a game-winning grand slam. Like, yeah. And then he did it, like, a bunch of times in a row.
Yeah, exactly. All right, when we come back, we're going to bring it home, pass it along to Damon Ratto and Kolsky. We're going to get back to the Golden State Warriors. They play tonight in a game, not very meaningful, but they play Sunday in their most meaningful game in the history of the Chase Center. We're going to talk about it on the other side on 95.7.
You're listening to Steiny, Guru, and Dibs. Featuring Sean.
That's a problem.
Dickinson.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. We're going to be here till 2 o'clock, and then we're going to pass it along to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky. Although I saw Whitey Gleason in the Zoom picture, so it's going to be Whitey Gleason, Nick Friedell, and not sure who, if anybody, if it's a two or three man.
And Ratto.
Ratto, too.
Ratto doesn't
and Ratto.
Take any days off.
Full yeah. studio, by
Ratto's
the way.
He's one of those guys that doesn't take time off, but everybody wants him to.
God, we're so stupid.
I got a great relationship with Ratto.
Does he know that?
No, he has no clue. He has no
hey, Ray,
clue.
You ever been to Idaho?
Yeah.
That's you.
Oh, God. Yeah, that. Yeah, he didn't. He didn't like that. Right. I know. Ray and I. We coexist. How about if I put it that way?
What you got?
What do you mean?
Should have muted yourself.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, we could hear you open the can.
Yeah.
Open a can of water or something, maybe bubble water, maybe soda.
Oh, boy.
No,
it's the Pellegrino. Pellegrino with the lemon flavor. Pellegrino. I know. Yeah. You guys thought I was a tap water guy.
Bubbly.
Hey, we have those bubblies. Yeah, bubbly, yeah. We have those bubblies. Yeah.
I go LaCroix, too.
You guys, you know what? Come on. You know how professional I am. Shame on you. Shame on you for thinking.
You want me to pop a White Claw right now? You want me to go to the fridge and pop?
Well, you know what's funny, JD? We got to do Lock of the Day, even though I don't know who the hell's going to do it. But I don't know if I've said this before, but back in the days when I was a sports writer covering the Warriors, and I wasn't the only one. This was almost not everybody, but a lot of the old-timers did it. Game would be over, you'd file your story, which was the first story, which was just the running game story. Then you would go to the locker room, you'd go there for 15, 20 minutes, get all your quotes, then go back to the media room, and absolutely, I always have one beer while I was writing my second story. One beer. Occasionally, if I had a little writer's block, it got into 1.5 beers. But the longer you go in this business, the shorter it actually takes to do the write through. So, yeah, I would, you know, you'd be looking around. Guys would be having beers while they're writing their stories. Yes, Kyle.
I can confirm that this still goes on, at least in the Levi Stadium press box.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Now, football's a little different. I'll tell you why, is because those guys have to, after a football game, they have to do a lot of kind of comprehensive work. And they're usually, the guys who are writing stories have more to write than just a 1 out of 82 basketball game. So they may put some words behind them. Yeah, exactly. So got to be a little more careful if you're a football guy. Football guy.
Yeah, it's a longer night. And I know at Chase, they, you know, last year before the pandemic at Chase, you could grab a cold one or maybe have one delivered up to where you're, you know, if we're doing the broadcast, tie a top.
Yeah.
You know, just one, you know, that's
exactly,
nice deal there. And you know, the one that I really like is and I think you know where I'm going, is Portland.
Yeah.
Is in Portland in the media room up there, they bring the keg out.
Yes, they do.
They roll the keg out into the workroom, and they've got basically a bartender that manages the keg, and there's a couple of bottles of wine there too. And hey, what do you want? And it's good beer too. It's
not
like Coors. Yeah, it's good Portland
beer,
craft beer, not like Coors Light.
No,
you know, or anything like that. No. It's just it's good stuff, and you know you get a good pour, like
you get a good
20-ounce cup, you know, 16-20-ounce cup, and you know, leave a tip, and it's complimentary. Leave a tip, you know, guys hanging out for an hour and a half, maybe after the ball game, as everybody gets their work done. I miss that. That's where it's at.
Portland was great at that. Hell, I could go. One thing us media guys know is we know where the good pregame meals are in what city, and we know what cities, you know, they have accessible beer in the media room. During the Don Nelson years, I never really had to worry about that because you could just go into the Warrior locker room and pick up about 4 Bud Lights, because they always had about 6 cases laying around when Don Nelson was the coach. And he was just going to go to waste, in other words. All right, let's do this Lock of the Day.
It's time for Guru's Lock of the Day.
Luck be a lady tonight.
Oh, yeah. Dibs is commandeering Guru's Lock of the Day, which means that we are taking over. Lock of the Day is brought to you by BetQL. Baseball is back. Basketball teams are battling for playoff spots. And BetQL can help you bet on all of it. BetQL analyzes every bet from every game to find you the most profitable betting opportunities. We'll tell you more about that in just a moment. It's time to get better at betting. Visit BetQL.com and use promo code BAY for 20% off. That's 20% off with promo code BAY, B-A-Y, at BetQL.com. Dibs began his turn at Lock of the Day by riding the Hawks minus 12.5 against the Magic. That was a five-star bet via BetQL, a pretty big spread, but it was no problem for the Hawks.
They keep switching and pressuring the ball. Here's Bogdanovich. Wow, massive three, and it's nothing but net.
Ouch. Ouch.
Holy crap.
Oh, my goodness.
Thanks, Bally Sports South, for that audio. Bogdan Bogdanovich's three you just heard put the Hawks up 30 late in the third quarter. They cruised to a 116-93 win, easily covering the 12.5 points. BetQL did not let Dibs down with the five-star pick. He's 1-0. I imagine we would have another five-star pick today, but Dibs is having a technical issue.
You want to get it, Kyle?
Yeah, I'll grab that.
Thank you.
Yeah, hello. Oh, hey, Dibs. Yeah. Yeah, no, we are doing Lock of the Day. Yeah, 120, just like always. Yep. Uh-huh. No, we did not blow through it. No, we're doing it on time. Yes, I promise. I know, 30 years in the business. We got it. Thanks, man. Yeah. You got a pick for today? Checking it right. Five-star on the BetQL app. Yeah. Okay, Dynamite. Thanks. All right, guys. That was Dibs. The pick is in.
Spadone.
I think the pick is in. Hang on.
It ain't the weekend yet. We got this all planned out, JD. You just sit tight, buddy.
It's the pick, the lock today. The Jazz are facing the Thunder. Dibs is riding the under 221 in that game. Under 221 points is your lock of the day.
This is one where we need the guru. Why? I have no, like, I can't even think, other than the fact that the Thunder stink and
why
don't squeak. Thanks.
So here's the thing, is the Jazz play really good defense. They're playing for something. The Thunder are actively tanking, and they couldn't score if they were trying to score. Yeah. So I imagine if the Thunder get to 95, the Jazz would need to score like 130-ish to hit that over. So I like the pick.
Gotcha. That's the Jazz Thunder under 221. Dibley started his stretch 1-0. And JD, it's funny because we used to do an NBA show every week and, obviously had a ton to talk about. How about the Hawks? 25-11 since Greg Popovich ripped their management for firing Lloyd Pierce. How about that?
Yeah, that's Nate McMillan has done a hell of a job, and that was 100% the right move. And I'll tell you, another coaching job that was harangued by the media was Finch getting hired off of the Toronto staff and going mid-season to Minnesota. And that team has been, it's not 25-11 and what Nate McMillan has done, but he's done a hell of a job. And I think there's some people that owe the Timberwolves, frankly, an apology for some of the things that were said about, Chris Finch going there, because he looks like a legitimate NBA head coach and they've played better with him at the helm.
No doubt. And I kind of felt like he got the brunt of something that the organization should have gotten. There was a coach in-house, that an assistant that apparently people wanted or assumed that he was going to be the next guy, and they went out of
David Vanderpool.
There you go. Thank you.
The one thing that about that, like, and this is just like, I just wanted to get your take on, like, why, if you stink as a team, would you hire somebody that's on the staff? Like that to me, and I know there was a racial component to it too, which is why they were harangued for it, and that's fair to question, especially today. But why, like, my first thought was, why would you, if you want to go in a different direction, like, why would you hire somebody that's on the current staff and say he's going to be the guy?
Well, there's a reason. There is one reason, and I think we can see it with the Atlanta Hawks. If you bring in a guy who's clearly at first to try, like, okay, it felt like Lloyd Pierce is the coach of the Hawks. Now they're going into this season where they have expectations. Maybe you look at that staff and say, we need just one guy more on the staff with some gravitas. And it turns out to be Nate McMillan. And so I get it. Nate McMillan wasn't a lifer there in Atlanta, but they did hire him as the top assistant, and it worked. But he had just come in, so it's a little bit different. And I know what you're saying. It would be like if the Warriors fire Steve Kerr and say we're going to hire Jaren Collins. Although that would be more like, but the Warriors don't stink. Never mind. That was a bad.
Yeah. No, and I look, and I think, you know, David Vanderpool, who was with Portland before, like, he may wind up going to Portland again, you know, because it sounds like Terry Stotts is going to be out there.
True.
So I think he's going to get an opportunity, and he's obviously widely respected. And I know Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum in particular were like, hey, this dude's legit. Like, he should get a job. So, but yeah, Nate McMillan, I mean, you talk about a guy that's, I mean, he's won. And I mean, maybe not in the playoffs, but he's proven, you know, that he can take a team over and they're going to play with a better purpose and more organized and just be, you know, better prepared. And so that was a great call at the right time, and it winds up where, hell, they're not even in the play-in. They're in the full tournament.
Yeah, they're trying to actually get home court now in the first round. Okay. Yeah, I call them kind of the Warriors East. We try to keep people abreast of the Warriors East, which is the Hawks, just because they had a bunch of guys from the Warriors who now work for the Hawks. Anyway, tonight, ladies and gentlemen, the Warriors play the New Orleans Pelicans at the Chase Center, but it's just a prelude to Sunday's 12:30 start against the Memphis Grizzlies. That game's for all the marbles, or at least as many marbles as there can be for a regular season game. So tonight's game against the Pelicans means nothing, and Sunday's game against Memphis means the difference between the 8th seed and the 9th seed, and that difference is profound. If you're the 8th seed, you just have to win one play-in game to advance out of two. And if you're the 9th seed, you have to win two games out of two to get into the postseason. So there's a big difference between 8 and 9. Let's talk about tonight first, JD, because you kind of announced or repeated what the Warriors have released. No Wiggins, no Curry, no Draymond Green tonight. Is that correct? Or as of right now, they're just listed as questionable or banged
up. Officially, and we should give Anthony Slater the hat tip on this.
Gotcha.
Because Anthony Slater did report that they're out. The latest injury report, the next one will be at 2:30. That's when I think it will become official that all of those guys will be listed as out. But Anthony Slater did get the scoop on it, if you want to call it that, about an hour or so ago. After the initial injury report for today at 10:30 was released, and Steph and Draymond and Wiggins were questionable at that point. So he had a source tell him, hey, these guys aren't playing, and so it'll become official in the next hour. And the Warriors did also have Michael Mulder listed as questionable on the injury report as well. Eric Paschal, I know Steve Kerr said, was going to play. Yesterday he said he's going to play tonight, and he's listed as probable. So I know you'd mentioned Kevon Looney. Well, what about him? He actually hasn't been on the report at all, and I know the Warriors are going to need bodies just so they're not playing, you know, just so they can play with, you know, maybe 10 or you know, 11, even with the top three players out. So that's kind of where things stand at this point. Should be official here within the hour.
Yeah, so, I mean, the bad news, unfortunately, is if you're going to tonight's game, you're probably going to miss Curry, Wiggins, you're probably going to miss Green, you're going to miss Zion Williamson, you're going to miss Lonzo Ball, and it looks like you may even miss Brandon Ingram, which is too bad, but if you have a ticket for Sunday, you're going to get your money's worth. Go ahead, JD, it looks like you're seeing
something there. It stinks, but it makes sense.
Right.
Like, it just, it's hard to, like, it 100% from a basketball standpoint, there is no upside for Steph, Draymond, or Wiggins to play tonight in a game that will impact nothing, and it will all be on the line on Sunday. You can't have any of those three come up with an injury that impacts that game, which could impact the next game, which could be the difference between getting in the playoffs and playing a series and not. Now, all that said, it stinks. It stinks if you
right.
have a ticket. It stinks, you know, if you're doing the pre and the post game show, frankly. But it's understandable 1,000% as the right thing to do.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. The only thing that crossed my mind, but I dismissed it after thinking about it a little longer, is, well, what if there's any concern about rust from not playing till Tuesday, from Tuesday till Sunday? But you know what? There's not really. I mean, there really isn't. I mean, Curry's going to be in the gym. He probably took a day off yesterday or today, or you know, So I think they're going to be fine. Here's the one thing I did think of, JD, and I've never really heard this. You know, some guys have clauses in their contract where if they play every game, they get a bonus. You know, not Arvidas Sabonis, they get a bonus.
Wiggins must not.
Well, I'm wondering. What about this? Let's say Wiggins had a $100,000 bonus or $200,000 bonus if he played every game. I wonder if the Warriors would come to him on a night like tonight and say, look, we'll still give you that bonus. Take the night off. We got to have you on Sunday. You know what I mean? Or
that'd be the right thing to do. In fact, I may even just put the rat on the table. I mean, I'd even go to them and be like, look, like you better start me and let me run up and down one time and then pull me out, because that thing needs to convey, or like you say, right, just do the right thing and tack it on. But yeah, that's interesting. That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, that would definitely be something that Wiggins would have earned for this season. No question.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it's all setting up for Sunday, 12:30 afternoon game. That's also going to be an ESPN game. It's been turned into a nationally televised game, and I love it. You know, I know, JD, that there are aspects of the play-in model that some people don't like, and I'm not really sure how I feel about it altogether, but okay, this year it's here, so I'll be open-minded and check it out. I get it. You could look at Sunday's game and say, well, you know, if there weren't a play-in game, this would be for making the playoffs or not making the playoffs. That's true. But I like here's what I like. I like the fact that there will be a game. It might not be Sundays, but there will be a game where you win, you're in, you lose, you're out. And that never happens in the NBA. And I'm not considering an elimination game the same thing, even though technically it is, because you see that coming. All right, you get down 2-0 in a series, you win one, you get back to 2-2. Okay, now it's 3-2. We got to win to take the 7. But one and done, you know what? I'm not sure NBA guys, I think one of the reasons they don't like it is because it does add an element of pressure and tension that they're kind of not used to. And it's this. I went on this earlier a few weeks ago. I think it's why the NBA doesn't want to go to the 1-1 free throw shooting. Instead, they go the other way where they want to penalize the hack-a-shack. It's like, you know what? Let's create situations where we do put more pressure on these players.
Yeah, that's interesting. That really is interesting. I think, especially when you get to the playoffs, players are used to having that at least one mulligan in a series.
Exactly.
At least one, and you know that the best team is going to, you know, over a full series, the best team is going to win. I mean, how often do we see series where maybe the underdog team will win one game? Hell, even one of the first two or even the first game, and for a couple of days, it's like, there's something going on here.
Yep.
And then by the end of it, it's a 4-1 series, right? And it's like, not really. Like the favorite handled business, and yeah, they went through a little bit of stress to do it, but they wound up doing it. I think there's a legit fear of, you know, two games and we're toast, you know, Laker, you know, for the Lakers, you know, for the Warriors, although I think the Warriors have been fighting for this all year, so they're in it from a different frame of mind. Like, the Warriors have been fighting to move up all year. The Lakers right now are trying to prevent themselves from cratering down, so maybe they have a little bit of a different perspective on it. I'm curious to see And I haven't been able to find the firm format other than it's going to be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday next week. But the one thing, and I know there were a couple of different things that were passed along that didn't, you know, we were talking about this with Friedel on Warriors This Week last weekend, and it's, you'd have to have, wouldn't you have to have the West and the East play the same day? Like, wouldn't you have to have the, meaning like the West would have to be Tuesday or Wednesday, both West teams Tuesday or Wednesday, because you got a loser and a winner that need to play each other, so you got to have one off. So to me, you like it would have to be Tuesday West West, Wednesday East East, Thursday West West, Friday East East, or some kind of combination of that. Otherwise, you may have some kind of back to back. I know I'd read different stories saying maybe that wouldn't be the case. Like you have to make it fair that way, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, if you're telling me that the dates have not been fully set, there's no way a team wins on a Friday to make it into the postseason in game one Saturday. There's no way. That game's got to be Sunday at the earliest.
Yeah, I think the way it should work, and we'll see. And again, I haven't been able to confirm this, but the way it should work is either the West is Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, meaning their first game would be Saturday, or Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, meaning the first game of the actual series for the teams that advance would be Sunday. So you've got a little bit of breathing room. Now you could say that a team wins Tuesday or Wednesday. They could play Saturday still because they have a couple of days. But as far as those teams that have to fight in that second play-in game to get in, you'd have to either say it's Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, or Sunday, or Wednesday, Friday, Sunday.
Gotcha. Hey, I just got a text from one of my guys who's usually always on top of this stuff. He texted me that the game's actually blacked out on ESPN in the Bay here Sunday because it's still going to be NBC Sports Bay Area. And you know what? That happened to me. Was it Tuesday's game? Was it Tuesday?
Yeah, some are and some are blacked out and some aren't.
Okay.
And usually games that are added late are blacked out. But okay. I would have thought there would have been an exemption for that last game of the year. That actually does surprise me.
All right. Well, that's my guy Jason. So thank you to him if he's right. If you're wrong, don't ever text me again, Jason. All right. You know what? Like, and here's what I was also thinking when I was talking about. I love that there's going to be a play-in scenario in which it's do or die. And I kind of said, you know, you don't get that in the NBA. Well, you don't get it often. And I was thinking about this. What are the most memorable Warriors moments from their dynasty? To me, it's when they were down 3-2 against Houston and when they were down 3-1 to Oklahoma City. Now, those were true you-lose-you're-done games. And from those games came probably the highest highs of the Warriors dynasty. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah, everybody wants to roll through like they did that one year and would they go 16-1? But the ones you remember and the ones that kind of mean the most, it's where you come back, where your back's against the wall, where you lose one game and it's over.
Yeah, my favorite series, just going back through the dynasty to cover, I could name them. It's in no particular order, but it's definitely the Oklahoma City series and the finals in 2016. Those two were great. The Houston in 2018 for sure, and then the Houston series in 2019 in the second round when Durant goes out and the Warriors still are able to finish the Rockets off, not only in Game 5, but they go back to Houston and they win in Game 6 without Durant, doesn't even come back for a Game 7. And then I thought that the Toronto series was compelling as hell. Unfortunate that, the way it ended as far as the injuries, right. I would have loved to have seen that go to a Game 7, back in Toronto, regardless of the outcome. But the Toronto series and the Cleveland series in the finals in 16 and 19 – and then the series that the Warriors won against the Rockets twice in Oklahoma City. Those are probably my top five favorite series to cover. It was pure basketball. It was competitive. The stakes were at the utmost. And it was just great stuff, man. I'll never forget that. I mean, the vibe in OKC in 2016. I mean, it felt like, wow, this is really, like, I'll never forget being in that building in that game six and thinking, wow, like, is this the way it's going to end? Like, the 73-9 is going to, and then it didn't, because Klay Thompson went off and Oklahoma City kind of got a little tight. Yep. And I'll never forget how just you could hear a pin drop in that building at the end of that night at OKC, and that was it. I mean, that was Durant's last home game with the Thunder, and you look at just how that can change the course of history. Then the Warriors get Durant, they win two more. Just unbelievable stuff to think of where that stood with 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes to go.
No doubt, I realized this with the Giants during their run in 10, 12, and 14, that every little thing gets magnified. Every little thing becomes a little story or vignette that is huge because it was the year you won it. Like, for example, Scudero in the rain looking up that photo. Everybody just loved it. And, whether it's the panda hat or, like, every moment Hunter Pence's championship blood speech, for example. And, what I remember about that game, game six in OKC, that's the game that Joe Lacob got on his knees and bowed to Klay Thompson, right?
Yeah.
He kept going. The owner of the Golden State Warriors got on his knees and pretended to bow to Klay Thompson after his incredible game six saved him. And, like, then that becomes part of the lore.
And remember all the stuff about Draymond with Steven Adams, and was that going to impact that series? And then it didn't, and there was a belief that maybe the league let Draymond get off the hook for that, but then it winds up popping up in the series against Cleveland when the Warriors, there are two things that stand out to me as far as the 2016 finals. It was being in Cleveland at Quicken Loans Arena. And the moment that happened with LeBron and Draymond, the Warriors had just clinched the game to go up 3-1. And I'm thinking, the series is over at that point. Like, the Warriors are going to win the championship because they're up 3-1. And I remember thinking in the moment, we did Warriors this week the next day. Like, this is nothing. Like, this wasn't a big deal. Like, he's not really going to get suspended for that. And then, wouldn't you know, he did wind up getting suspended for it. So I'll never forget that. And then I'll never forget Game 7. Just never at any point in Game 7 thinking the Warriors. Like, and what's crazy is never at any point that whole season did I think the Warriors weren't going to win the championship until they got tight in the final 5 or 6 minutes and couldn't score. And then Kyrie hit the shot. But even up until Kyrie hit the three, I thought, they're not losing this game, even though it got ugly and they were clearly tight and didn't know what they wanted to do. And they really didn't know what they wanted to do after Kyrie hit the shot. It was like, oh, God. And, they had that 40-second possession where it's the worst possession maybe in the Steve Kerr era of Warrior possessions at the worst time. But I'll just never forget not thinking at any point for the whole year they were going to lose until he made that shot.
Yeah, I'll add on to that. I don't know about that year, but that was the year I thought. I mean, I never thought it was going to happen, but the Oklahoma City series, you were like, "Huh, is this going to happen? Is Oklahoma City going to knock off this team in 5 games or 6 games?" But the other thing is, and you know this, JD. Sometimes I get too literal, but I know you can handle it. I always have to do this just because I'm a jerk. Draymond did not get suspended for that thing for what happened with him and LeBron. It had built up to that. He had
no
points.
Doubt.
You know, I know. But I just hate when people are like, he got suspended for that. No, he didn't. He got suspended for that and a plethora of other things that happened during that postseason. But you're right. Game seven is the one there where you're right. I never imagined they were going to lose that game.
This is for you.
I just didn't. I mean, even when Kyrie made the shot, so much had gone right that year. It was like, well, how are the Warriors going to do it tonight? You know what I mean? Who's gonna knock down a three and get fouled and win it? And you're right. The possession at, quite frankly, the last 3 or 4 minutes of that game, boy, they looked awful.
They got tight.
They did get tight, and they really kind of didn't know where to go. And, you know, obviously you had Steph, but that's when you kind of realized that as great as he is.
He was banged up, too.
He was banged
up. He couldn't get where he wanted to get.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. He couldn't shake Kevin Love, which now is something that's in everybody's memory. So, no, that I'll never forget that game. Because it was unexpected. I'll also never forget the game. You know, they were beaten twice at Oracle Arena to lose titles because Toronto did it to them too in 19. And 19 was easier to take, I would think, just because they were so banged up. And that was the thing about 19. They put up a valiant effort. I even said it. I was like, this team, they were champions in defeat, I thought, against
Big
the
time.
Raptors. And it, you know, the other thing I remember about game six against Oracle, at Oracle with the Raptors, were how many Raptor fans were there, and they stayed afterwards and they were chanting, and it was cool. It was kind of cool to see, even though the Warriors had lost.
And that series was amazing too, because I mean, the Warriors were down 3-1. I mean, they came home 1-1, and then, you know, Clay couldn't play in game three, and then, you know, that the game three kind of threw it, because I think you thought, you know, hey, the Warriors are going to come back and at least it's going to be 2-2. But then they lost both going back. But then they win in Toronto in game five, because that was the, like, I couldn't believe walking out of Oracle after game four that could be the last game at Oracle. Like, I was right. Like, oh my God. Like, and then for the Warriors to win, to get the last game for sure, I thought even that was special, just to where it was appropriate that everybody knew when the last game was going to be, rather than having it be an unknown, even though the Warriors wound up going down.
Right. Yeah, man. But it just goes to show you, and I've been thinking about this a lot this year, JD, you know, we just look back on their five runs to the finals. You know, they're not likely to have a run to the finals this year, but again, that does not mean this season can't be fulfilling. It doesn't mean this season can't be satisfying. And it certainly doesn't mean that Steph Curry can't do something this year that we will be talking about 20 years from now, just like we talk about some unbelievable performance. I always say, like, okay, you know, Isaiah Thomas, when he had an unbelievable game six at L.A. against the Lakers, they lost that game. Well, he had 44 on one leg. That, you know, that adds to his, you know, his legacy. So, you know, that's where I always come from. You don't have to win a title if you're not the best team, but you can still be happy with the result. Looked
yeah,
like you were going to say something. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just curious as to how much time we had left. I didn't want to run over. I want to make sure I seed our time for Whitey and
yeah, we got a minute. We got about a minute.
Those guys. But no, I think, you know, kind of to bring it back to the context of now, is, I mean, there are going to be some special moments. Like, even a team that doesn't win a championship is going to have special moments along the way, and Sunday could be an all-time, you know, special regular season moment for Steph or Draymond, and one of these play-in games, or two of them if the Warriors have to play them, or maybe they wind up having a crazy win in a playoff series that they don't ultimately, you know, end in victory. But so the next couple weeks are going to be a lot of fun, is what
I mean.
I'm
if Steph
at.
Curry, if Steph Curry on Sunday, the game is similar to the game against Utah, and Steph Curry knocks down a three like he did against Utah, it's going to be a highlight that will live forever. And it should, because it's still a great moment for the Golden State Warriors. All right, hey, JD, a lot of fun, man. Thanks for coming in. Really appreciate it. Love doing the show with you and Dibs. Coming up next, Whitey Gleason, Ray Ratto, Nick Friedel. They're taking you right up to Warriors Live at 5 o'clock, where JD will reintroduce himself. They're going to tell you why tonight's game does matter for the Golden State Warriors. Have a great weekend, everybody. What else can I be? All apologies.